We also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. In life, we can go through times where we become discouraged, no doubt. And we might find that we are attacked. We may find situations in which people we trusted become people who do something that blows our mind, grabs our attention, but not in a good way, in a bad way. Sometimes when that happens, and if you've gone through it, and particularly the level of which you have gone through something like that, the more in which you find it hard to once again begin to trust people. And I'm talking about people maybe you've had lifelong acquaintances with. I'm talking about people who maybe were close family members. I'm talking about people who have gone through situations where it was a spouse. I'm talking about people who are in high school or junior high or whatever grade you may be in, who had that best friend or that group of best friends, and come to find out you now have dealt with betrayal. You've had those people turn on you. I want you to know that in this series as a whole, a primary thematic type verse that you need to have always in your mind as we go through these is a recognition that Jesus understands because he has gone through things along the way. I'm going to read from Hebrews chapter 4. In verse 14 it says, "Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need." I'm going to read that particular passage every time we meet. And I hope that begins to center in with you. I'm going to hope and maybe challenge you some this week to do some things like go home and spend some time with Hebrews chapter 4 in those particular verses, 14 through 16. Meditate upon them. Read them again and again. I challenge you to do some things when you leave, even tonight and especially tomorrow night. A couple of nights where you'll be challenged to do something once you leave here as well. I'd like for us to have a time of gathering to have some joy and refreshments together, and I'm going to hope that we can do that Saturday after the 5 o'clock service. I need to talk to some of the ladies, and I realize that, but I think we can come together and we can have some desserts and some simple refreshments following Saturday, but I don't want to do that tonight, and I didn't want to do it tomorrow night, and I don't want to do it Friday night. And there's a reason, because as we leave here on these first three nights, I want us to go together as couples or whoever you are, and go with a friendly handshake and love in your heart to one another, and some laughter as well. But I want you to go, and I want you to try your best to also take every night with you and practically do something that I think might help you, especially if you've recently, or if the feeling of betrayal is still there. Now, sometimes we move on, but sometimes it is still ever present with us. You recall these words, perhaps some of us do. Brutus, as you know, was Caesar's angel. How dearly Caesar loved him. This was the most unkindest cut of all. For when the noble Caesar saw him stab in gratitude, more than strong than traitor's arms, quite vanquished him, then burst his mighty heart, and in his mantle muffling up his face, even at the base of Pompey's statue, which all the while ran blood, great Caesar fell. Oh, what a fall was there, my countrymen. Then I and you and all of us fell down, whilst bloody treason flourished over us. If you recognize that, that is from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, Act 3, Scene 2, Et tu, Brute. Even you, Brutus? I mean, it's one thing for our enemies, for people who want our position, for people who are after our power. It's one thing for them to turn, but even you, Brutus? Even you, wife? Husband? Even you, best friend, whom I have trusted in? For some, even you, father and mother, who have let me down completely. The list could go on. It sometimes does. Betrayal is a gross violation of trust. It really is. It's an ugly thing to betray. By definition, betrayal is, and here are a few, to lead astray, especially seduce, or a violation of a person's trust or confidence, to deliver to an enemy by treachery, to fail or desert, especially in a time of need. And as Julius Caesar had his Brutus, as George Washington, we might say, had his Benedict Arnold, so Jesus himself had his Judas. In a sense, Jesus also had his Peter, who had, at least in the sense of denial and abandonment, for a period. In a sense, Jesus had his other apostles, who when the great shepherd was struck, they would flee. But there is something about Judas that hangs different than those. We're going to get to Sunday morning's Bible study. We're going to get to that lesson of forgiveness, of the hopefulness as Peter comes back and has a chance of renewal. And he is charged to do something special, to set forth with a purpose in serving Jesus Christ. But Judas's ending is far too tragic, isn't it? It really is. A tragic story. A tragic story of betrayal of one who was so close, right there among the group, handpicked in a sense. David of old knew of these types of betrayals. So many times comes up in his Psalms that he wrote. Psalm 55 says, "For it is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it. If it were an enemy, I would expect it. I can handle that. Nor is it one who hates me who has exalted himself against me. Then I could hide from him. I could be aware of where he is, and I could protect myself. But it was you, a man of my equal, my companion, my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together, and we walked to the house of God in the throng." He says again in Psalm 41, "Even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, he has lifted up his heel against me." The closer we are to someone, the closer our relationship is, the deeper the wound, the deeper the cut, the unkindest of all cuts. Now, a pretty obvious statement tonight, and I'll say it likely again a time or two, but is, we don't want to be a betrayer. We should avoid the heart of betrayal. And if we see it or feel it beginning to well up within us, we need to do something, and quickly, that is much more in keeping with what God desires. You're supposed to love one another. You're supposed to love one another as we love ourselves. We're supposed to love one another and be neighborly and kind. be compassionate, caring. We're supposed to be a person who helps to bind wounds, not cause wounds. And there are a lot of people who cause wounds. The church should always be a place where healing can take place. That's what's so special about us. In coming to Jesus, we learn. We learn important lessons as we journey with Him to the cross. We have people who have experienced many different types of losses, and those are painful. We have many people that we know who have experienced various forms of betrayal. And sometimes the loss of a life of a loved one, especially one who has lived a long time and we've enjoyed their company, as painful as that is, what of the pain of the people who are alive but treat you as if you're dead to them? And yet maybe at one point you were so special to them. Those who give up on a relationship for no real reason other than you just don't meet their own selfish need any longer. Or how many have had this? Confiding in someone else, and maybe before a spouse or a close person to you. It can be dangerous. Now, by the way, it's not always wrong. But be careful. When the person that you are the closest to, for some reason, all of a sudden becomes the person you don't trust enough with the most important things of your life. If you've ever seen someone or experienced yourself being cheated financially, betrayal can happen in the business world. Passed over by someone, or a boss promises that you're the next one on the list, right, for a promotion, and then you're passed over in that instant. In a sense, cheating someone out of what they've earned. Sometimes you find that people that you once trusted are the ones that you go to and you want them to do business for you, and you wind up finding out that they didn't do you right after all. A kind of betrayal that can happen. See, betrayal, what I'm trying to show, is not just in the big things that we might think of, cheating in a relationship, being a person who takes the life of a friend like a Brutus, an obvious Benedict Arnold who turns on his nation. But it also can hit individually in many different ways. And at the heart of it, when you think of why Jesus was betrayed by Judas, it came down to money. Money. Greediness. And so even though not at the level, and it's not at the level of what Judas did to Jesus, cheating people, even financially, is a dangerous thing. And especially so when you know for a fact that people trust you. I have a friend of mine who's enduring that right now. Without saying too much, someone who had his own company and had brought someone on, and all of a sudden the someone who he had brought on and trained for several years decided to begin his own company. And as he walked out with a lot of contracts that he had been setting up for months in his back pocket, leaving my friend scrambling for business again and having to change his company name. Betrayal. It hurts. Some, they hide a drug addiction. They hide something that they don't want anyone to know. This really damages relationships. Sharing a painful, very personal information, secrets that you have trusted upon a best friend or a spouse or someone like that, and then they turn around and tell someone else. just general lying, the deception. I found a quote that stuck out to me in some research. And this was one person, but there was several others who said something similarly. I just decided this one was a little bit more succinct. But they were saying that when it comes to relationships, people dramatically underestimate honesty, the importance of honesty. I don't think we have to be brutally honest, as some people would say, well, I'm just brutally honest. Well, leave the brutal out, would you please? At least as Christians, stop that. No sense in that. But be honest, right? Be true to people. Be as kind as possible, as loving as possible, but tell them what is right, what is true, what you know to be. You ever known someone to turn someone against them that they loved? Talk about something that's, you know, walking on difficult ground here. But one of the ways that this is seen a lot in relationships that go sideways, go wrong, is one parent turning the children against another parent. Am I right? And I know it has to be hard. I don't really fully understand what people go through, and no one circumstance or situation can tell what anybody else is going to go through, right? Everybody is a little bit unique, a little different and what they go through and what they have to deal with. And sometimes, as much as you might try and want to find a way to get along, another person won't let you. And I get that. I'm not here to stand as judge. But I am to call attention to a danger of betraying a trust and deceiving or lying, especially stretching truths to end up turning someone against someone because you have it out for them. And talking bad about people behind their back. Excluding close friends from important moments of life. Being rejected after initially being accepted. Now, I'm putting some of these in here at various levels because I know it hits different people at different walks of life. I know these last few are probably hitting more of our younger crowd. And I meant for it to. It's not nice when you have people who you thought were your good friends and they don't invite you to the birthday party, right? Betrayal, in a sense. You have an expectation. I invited you to my birthday party. I thought we were friends. I'm trying to establish here betrayal, or this form of treason in some sense, I think hits all of us, or has hit most of us at some point. What do we do with it? How do we carry it? How do we move forward with healing and with love on our hearts? I think we learn from a walk with Jesus Christ our Lord as He makes His move towards the cross. I mean, it's part of God's plan for Him to go to the cross. And Judas's story is tragic, but it begins the movement, at least a more rapid movement, of the last few hours, the last few days and moments of Jesus Christ's life on earth. He knows the pain of being betrayed, and He knows it firsthand. John 13 records when Jesus had said these things, He was troubled in spirit, and He testified and said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." And the disciples looked at one another, perplexed about whom He spoke. Now there was one who was leaning on Jesus' bosom, one of His disciples whom Jesus loved. And Simon Peter therefore motioned to him to ask whom it was that he was speaking of. And leaning back on Jesus, he said, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is He to whom I shall give a piece of bread when I have dipped it." And having dipped the bread, He gave it to Judas Iscariot, son of Simon. Now after the piece of bread, Satan entered him, it says. And Jesus said to him, what you do, do quickly. What you are to do, go and do it. Now, all of this is happening right before the other apostles that are there, right? They're all there, and they've asked, and Jesus has told them. It's the one in which I'm going to hand this bread to. And he does it. And Satan enters into Judas. And Jesus says, Judas, go do what it is that you're set out to do, what your heart now has turned to do, to betray. And then we read this. But no one at the table knew for what reason he said this to him. For some thought that because Judas had the money box, that Jesus had said to him, buy those things we need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. Having received the piece of bread, he then went out immediately, and it was night. Interesting elements, for sure. Ever been in a situation where you just couldn't believe it when that was the person that betrayed you? You just couldn't believe that that was the friend who turned on you. Taking it another level to an extent. Not only was it not an enemy, but now at this moment a close friend. Not someone who had been following Jesus some for some time even at a distance or maybe off and on, but one of the inner group, the 12. So much so that it seems that he was playing the game right, putting on the right show. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seems odd to me that even in that moment when they've asked and Jesus has told them and they've seen him pass the bread to him and now they've seen him or heard him tell him to go and do what he's going to do, that they still can't imagine it's Judas. No one at the table knew for what reason he said this to them. Sometimes a betrayer can be very deceptive, to where few, if any, really, have any suspicion of his activity or hers. What we need to learn from this is a couple of things. Number one, this is practical time. When it comes to betrayal, be careful that you don't start blaming other people. Be careful. There may be situations where people maybe know or thought or considered or were a little uneasy about someone, but be careful placing blame on someone else and saying, well, why didn't you tell me? Sometimes it's hard to see. By the way, while we're on blame, and I had this one on the slide, should have put the other one as well, but that's okay. Avoid self-blame. Try to avoid that. You know what happens a lot of times to people who are betrayed? People who are hurt by someone close to them in many different ways? They start to think it was their fault. Right? Be careful about that. If you're holding any of that, be careful about that. Sometimes people say, well, I wasn't perfect. Well, the best friend that anyone could ever have, the perfect person, the only one that has ever walked the earth, was still betrayed by one of his closest friends who ate with him. Right? I ain't about to blame Jesus. Now, it may be that sometimes we do things and we hurt people, and in turn, perhaps in some way, they begin to maybe hurt us back. By the way, a vicious cycle. What do we then begin to hurt them more? And they begin to hurt us more? And back and forth we go, right?
And we know where that ends. Again, sometimes in life, people won't walk with you. They won't work with you. They won't listen. They aren't willing to meet in the middle and come to an agreement of how to walk through life together. I get that. But along the way, be careful of placing too much self-blame upon yourself, especially when you have been betrayed by someone and it's come out of left field. But what else do we need to do? As hard as it is, begin to practice as much as you can forgiveness. We'll talk about this more between Jesus and Peter in a little less severe of a situation where he denies Jesus. That is, Peter denies Jesus. We'll talk about this Sunday morning in Bible class. But have a sense about it already now. If you can at all, practice forgiveness to the best of your ability. Why? It's better for you, first of all. Okay, grudges. Let's talk about grudges. What good is a grudge? What does a grudge do to you? Who gets hurt by a grudge? Isn't it you? Isn't it everybody else around you that begins to be hurt by if you hold a grudge? Because when we hold a grudge within our hearts, we begin to become someone who puts off kind of an air of ugliness. And you can be a beautiful human being created in God's image, and you can have all the opportunities in the world, and you can be intelligent, but if you have a grudge in your heart, you begin to change. Your hair may be the same. Your eyes may be the same. Your weight may be the same. All of that may be the same, but you begin to change. And people start avoiding you. They see you coming and they're like, oh, I'm going down the other hall at work. They see you calling on the caller ID and they're like, I don't have time for that person today. I just don't have it in me to deal with that anymore. Right? So don't let betrayal become something that someone else does to you. Don't let that eat you up. Don't let them have that control over you. You be faithful. You go about what God's plan is for you, like Jesus went about the plan. Right? He continued on the path that was set before him. Erase betrayal away as best you can with prayer, with scripture, meditation. Practical helps. Ideas for you. If you're feeling that within you, if you've been betrayed, if you've been hurt in any way, take some time and spend it alone in prayer. Spend it reading in the Psalms. Spend it with David, who understood what it meant to have enemies after him. Do something like that. Spend it with Christ and his life, reading through one of the Gospels. Right? A hard one, but sometimes needed. Careful as you go about it. Not trying to say reject people or throw them away as if they don't matter, but sometimes when you are in the valley, when you are struggling yourself, you need to detach yourself at least a little bit from people. And especially you need to detach yourself from people that you cannot trust. Because one betrayal, and then sometimes a second betrayal, and the next thing you know, you're pulling away from everyone. And grudges and that cycle of hate and issues like that begin to well up within you again. On the opposite end, let's not always be about what we shouldn't do or what we're getting rid of. But we need to attach to some people too. We need to find people around us who are full of faith. The words of Paul as he writes to the church at Galatia, to be understanding
the level of which there, that's a temptation, particularly, that is being discussed. When someone is found in a falling into a temptation, they've sinned, they're dealing with something, that we who are spiritual, those who are spiritual, are to be there and help them out. And that we are to bear one another's burdens. We are to fulfill the law of Christ as we care and show concern for one another. Sometimes you're the one who has the burden. Now, there's going to be times where you're not the one with the burden. And you're going to have the moment where you can be the one who helps. But sometimes you're the one with the burden and you need somebody. Seek that person out in your life. It'll make a great difference, especially if you can have someone that you can trust. As I said earlier, do not become a betrayer. Don't actually turn into that which you yourself have come to despise because of what you've endured. Look what it says about he who betrayed. Behold, the hand of my betrayer is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goes as it has been determined. As I said earlier, Jesus is going through with the plan. But woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. Woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. God remains true to and helps and strengthens the ones who are faithful. But those who practice treason in this sense against the Lord, they'll be judged. And we don't want to follow into the pattern of being like those people who would betray. We can be friends, we can do good, and we can even and especially need to show that, for the life of Christ teaches us that, especially even to those who have done us wrong. Watch your emotions. Be careful about your emotions. Now, Paul writes about that when he wrote the church at Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4. This is what it says, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 and following. Therefore, having put away all falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Then verse 26, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down upon your wrath, or anger, depending on translation. And give no opportunity to the devil. I've told people this before, especially I do this in premarital counseling, but it applies to any relationship. Do not let the sun go down upon your wrath does not mean that, oh no, the sun is setting right now, the preacher won't quit, and I've got a problem with someone, I need to run out of here. It's not saying that. It's saying don't let something fester, right? Don't let it be something that continues to be boiling over for long periods of time. I've known people who've held on to things for years. Years, and the other person didn't even know. And then they brought it up. Something triggers them in their anger moment. They just decide everything for the last 40 years, I'm just going to throw it on this person. That's a danger. That's a tool of the devil. Don't do that. Don't do that. If it's something that is that important to you, and you still, a week after it's happened, are still holding on to it, you better start figuring out a way to deal with it. Uncomfortable conversations sometimes have to happen, don't they, brothers and sisters? They do. They do. Watch your emotions. Don't let them get the best of you. Do good to everyone. I'm going to close out here tonight with the passage here in Romans chapter 12. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. That's a topic probably for another day, in a sense. That's its own kind of weighted issue there, the wrath of God and the vengeance being His. But the practical application for us that fits here is when we're betrayed, and it probably will happen. If it hasn't happened, you're going to go through it. Now, how do you move forward as a Christian, as a believer? You love people anyway, as much as you can. So much as and far as it depends upon you and what you can say or do, try to be at peace with all people. Let God handle, and He will, but let God handle judgment. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a Gatorade. Right? Give him a cup of water. In doing that, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Yes! Probably not the point of what Paul's saying. I say probably, and I mean it's not. But what he is saying is, and this is true, when we are good to people, and they're bad to us, and we're good to them, and they're bad to us, and we're good to them, it starts baking their noodle. Right? It really does. It begins to work on them. It begins to change them. They begin to look and think, now this isn't normal. Normally when I'm mean to someone, they're mean back, and then I'm justified to be meaner, and then they're meaner, and then we get in this great, you know, where we're antagonistic type thing. But when you're good to them, they don't know what to do with you. Now listen, this is where it really matters. And you begin to overcome evil. You see it? You get to be the person who might begin to help someone not be that vicious someone. That's gospel. That's Jesus. That's everybody matters. That's for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but God came, and even He especially came, even to those and with those who despised Him, He did what He needed to do to give them a way for salvation. Do not be overcome by evil. Don't let them win out on you, but you overcome evil with good. And God will bless you, and He will be with you. And in your times of need, when you cry out to Him, He will send people. You will have people of like mind with you. You will have people who also want to be good to one another and need a friend as well. That will happen. Sometimes you'll go through seasons where it feels like you're alone. But it'll be temporary. If you keep trusting in Him, it will be temporary. And God will see you through the difficult days. Jesus knows. He understands. He had a very close friend, a traveling companion with him every day that betrayed him, who walked up to him on one night with a legion behind him, an army behind him to take him and put him into chains and drag him off to the courts and all that they did to him. And he walked up to him and he gave him a kiss. An expression of love and friendship, respect, of honor. And it was a signal for them to take him. Sometimes people will do something that, on the outside appearance, looks to everyone as though he is doing something, she is doing something nice. But it's underhanded. Don't do that to people. But if it happens to you, move forward with as much grace and forgiveness as you can. God be with you.
if you need to come to the Lord who understands and knows. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If you've not yet been baptized into Christ Jesus, we would invite you to come and consider that. If you need the studies of the congregation or with me or any one of the good people here who'd be glad to study with you, please seek someone out. Please seek someone out and come to Jesus. Come to Him. He understands and knows. He's been tempted in all parts as we, yet without sin, so that all of us who have sinned can have access to salvation. Will you come? Will you come now as we sing number 730?